Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Daphne Wysham, who's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies and the founder and co-director of the Sustainable Energy and Economy Network. Since 1996, she has worked on research and advocacy at the intersection of climate change, human rights, fossil fuels, international finance, carbon markets, and sustainable economies. She's played a leadership role on Capitol Hill, advising the Congressional Progressive Caucus on a progressive agenda for climate change, and is currently conducting research around ways in which alternative metrics to the GDP, such as the genuine progress indicators, can be used to build a more sustainable society. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daphne Wysham.
Thank you for having me.
And the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration just released a report yesterday saying that the year 2012 had an average temperature rise which eclipsed the 1998 record by 1 degree Fahrenheit. So 2012 was the hottest year on record for the lower 48 states, consisting of the fourth warmest winter, the warmest spring, the second warmest summer, and a warmer than average fall. What does it take? I mean, how many more wake-up calls do we need to recognize that global warming is real?
Well, you know, I think the American public, that we all have woken up, that, you know, there's still a ways to go in terms of understanding what needs to be done. But the majority of Americans, polls suggest, actually do understand that climate change is happening and they want action taken on it. What we're dealing with, however, is a disinformation media machine and politicians who are heavily funded by fossil fuel industry that are confusing those few people who still don't understand the science on climate change and leading them to believe that we shouldn't believe what's happening around us is anything unusual, and also putting forward half measures or insufficient measures on climate action that really aren't going to be lasting solutions to this crisis. And really what we're up against is a timeline of just a few years, really just within the next 5 years or so. We as a country as well as around the world, we need to rapidly bring down the carbon emissions in the global atmosphere from where it is right now, which is at record highs, close to 400 parts per million, and get it down to 350 parts per million or lower. You know, you mentioned that the temperatures are a degree higher than they were in the late 90s, but an additional bit of information is that the temperatures in the last year were 3.2 degrees higher than the average for the entire 20th century. So what we experienced last year was pretty close to 2 degrees Celsius or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. The increase in temperature that scientists say we should not surpass if we are going to avoid some of the dangerous feedback loops that begin to take place when climate change starts to run away. And, of course, we know what's happening in the Arctic. The Arctic is melting rapidly. Glaciers are melting rapidly all over the planet. We've lived through Hurricane Sandy, record droughts, wildfires. I mean, Australia has just come up with a new index coding for coloring of just how hot it has gotten in the center of Australia, close to 126, 127 degrees. It's clear to all but the deniers and Fox News and, you know, those folks on Capitol Hill that don't want to pay attention to the truth that we are living through very dangerous climate change right now. And the question is, will President Obama really carry forth any sort of aggressive plan in his second term, or will it be more sort of compromise and not pushing forward on anything too aggressively and continuing to drill at every possible opportunity, exporting coal, continuing essentially with business as usual with minor modifications?
So as we experience a record hot year in 2012, following what you've just suggested about how media coverage is key to why the problem is not being addressed, according to an analysis by Media Matters, Sunday news talk shows on ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox spent fewer than 8 minutes on climate change in 2012 compared to over an hour of coverage in 2009. So given that NOAA's National Climate Data Center has said there were 356 all-time high record temperatures, records set or tied in 2012, you have this sort of disconnect between responsible, socially responsible coverage on the part of the media, at the same time, sort of hysterical coverage by weathermen and weatherwomen.
Yeah. And I've written about that a little bit. One of the things that I found just so frustrating, and I think all of us feel this when there's a historic storm like Sandy that inundated the Northeast and wiped away entire towns and buildings were underwater, homes have been destroyed, and we're still dealing with the aftermath of that. While it was happening, we have these weathercasters out there in the middle of the storm, sort of doing what they do, which is cover it in the context of, here's another record-breaking storm, and almost sort of getting an adrenaline rush about being, as close as they can get to the wave's edge, to the ocean's edge, and not giving any sort of context for what this means historically, politically, and what people can do to address this problem. Instead, it's just sort of ambulance chasing at its worst. And, I'm so frustrated with the way the media has been covering this. I don't know if I used to host a radio show on climate change and other environmental issues and did that for about 8 years and was very gratified to see just how many people wanted that information. We were carried on over 60 radio stations, but it's just so difficult, as to get the funding, to get the word out, especially when our public radio stations, many of them are taking money from the fossil fuel industry, and are even those stations or TV stations are reluctant to push things too far on climate coverage. So we're in a bit of a vicious cycle right now. And, the question is, can we break out of it as informed citizens? Can we actually push our elected officials in a different direction? The good news is that, so many countries around the world are taking action. That's very inspiring. Uruguay, for example, is pushing for 90% renewable energy by 2015. That's just in a couple of years. Germany and Denmark, I was just there in the fall and was witnessing their energy revolutions. They're working towards a carbon-free, nuclear-free future by probably around 2035. They originally were saying 2050, but I think they can do it sooner. Japan is also moving away from nuclear power and looking to the sun. We've seen people that are setting up, for example, solar investment funds just selling out overnight, like this new firm, Solar Mosaic, sold out in one day because they were able to get investors excited about investing in solar and getting a 4.5% return, which is higher than U.S. Treasury notes. So there's a pent-up demand, I think, for people to – people know that climate change is happening. They want their money to be invested in clean energy, not in the fossil, dirty energy, the expensive nuclear power, the dirty nuclear power of the past, but the clean energy of the future. And we've just got to take matters into our own hands and organize you know, and thankfully shows like your own are getting the word out, but we've got to just keep it up.
Again, I'm speaking with Daphne Washam, who is the founder and co-director of the Sustainable Energy and Economy Network, and she has played a leadership role on Capitol Hill advising the Congressional Progressive Caucus on a progressive agenda for climate change and is currently conducting research around ways in which alternative metrics to the GDP, such as the genuine progress indicators, can be used to build a more sustainable society. And there's no question the influence of the fossil fuel industry and the big lie of clean coal, the American Petroleum Institute, and the coal lobby. If you look at all of the talk shows on MSNBC and on CNN, particularly the Sunday morning shows and on PBS, almost all of them are funded or underwritten by the fossil fuel companies and their lobbyists. So they are clearly trying to shape the debate and continue the denial. And of course, one of the things that contributes to this problem is this convention in our press, where in the universe of discourse, there are two black and white, equal and opposite opinions, and you always have to have a balance, in quotes. So
right.
Therefore, climate deniers get equal billing with climate scientists, as teaching creationism is equated with evolution. So we have some serious problems with our media, but the extent to which the rest of the world is leaving us behind, I think, eventually we'll catch up, don't you think? I mean, we've heard forever how terrible life is in Canada with the national health system, but I think eventually people, the word gets out about the big lie. Give us a sense of how these countries, particularly in the northern hemisphere, the Denmark and Germany, which have very little sun, how are they able to do it? I mean, it makes us look really behind the curve because we've got so much sun and so much wind here.
Exactly. I mean, our wind and solar resources are so much more abundant than any of the northern European countries. I mean, Denmark has been, of course, working with wind for quite some time, and they really got going back in the 1970s on wind in the aftermath of the OPEC oil crisis. And so they've been gearing up to move away from fossil fuels for quite some time. And after, I don't know if you remember, this cartoon crisis that happened in Denmark, they also sort of decided, well, rather than limit their free speech and other essentially be held hostage potentially by any part of the world that may be reluctant to export oil if they criticize things in their press, they decided to push for 100% energy independence and to move towards wind to do that. Germany has, just finishing up with Denmark, Denmark has managed to not only generate electricity from wind, but they have such abundant wind energy. They're also generating heat and energy for transportation from wind, which is really path-breaking. They're converting wind energy into other forms of energy that could then be used to heat homes. So we have a lot to learn from what Denmark has already done. In terms of Germany, they are largely relying on solar, despite, as you mentioned, getting very little sun in Germany. It's more like the Pacific Northwest in terms of the weather there. But they have a very successful program called the feed-in tariff, where they are getting people to invest in renewable energy, for example, putting solar panels on their roof, knowing full well that when they make that investment, they will get a return on that investment that is set for 10 years or so, and therefore they know how quickly they'll be able to pay off their solar panel, because they'll actually be generating income from the energy that they produce. They sell it and feed it into the grid, and thereby they're able to pay off that solar panel and start actually making a profit after a certain amount of time. And enough people have figured out that this is such a great investment that they're throwing billions and billions of dollars at this feed-in tariff in Germany, to such a degree that over 50% of Germany's energy is actually owned by individual, the energy is produced and owned by individual homeowners, farmers, and so on, rather than large centralized utilities. So it's it really is about power to the people, about decentralizing power and generating income for people. And that has proven very attractive not only to Germany but to quite a few other countries that are looking to Germany and their model as a way of getting off of fossil fuels.
And again, I'm speaking with Daphne Washam, who is the founder and co-director of the Sustainable Energy and Economy Network. She has played a leadership role on Capitol Hill advising the Congressional Progressive Caucus on a progressive agenda for climate change. Let's talk about your new metrics to the GDP, the gross domestic product, such as the genuine progress indicators. Tell me about how, I mean, obviously, we need, since the deniers have so much traction in the media, and semantics are often important in the way arguments are framed, how can we reframe this debate and get people to recognize that in many ways the GDP is the problem? The notion that we have to have quarterly growth, which is inherent in our capitalist system, is ultimately unsustainable in terms of the biosphere. So there has to be obviously some serious rethinking about our entire way of life, really.
Really, yeah, exactly. Well, you know, one of the things that was sort of the mantra that came about in Copenhagen at the climate negotiations a few years ago was what we need is system change, not climate change. That essentially, if we're not dealing with the entire system that we're part of and really building it anew from the ground up, we're going to be confronting these problems over and over again and in just different forms. Of course, climate change is the, in my mind, is the sort of uber problem. But one of the things that, you know, has happened just sort of almost by accident is that when we developed the GDP as a metric back in the after the Great Depression, it was put in place in the United States and then it eventually embraced by countries around the world. People began using GDP to track their progress and to determine whether or not they were doing well or doing poorly. Well, what this has done to country after country around the world is it doesn't matter if you're producing more bombs or building more prisons or people are dying of cancer more. If your GDP is going up, that's a good thing. That's what people have been trained to accept, even though we know, for example, that, you know, people are less happy when they live in polluted surroundings. And we know that they're less happy when there's more crime and when they're stuck in traffic longer. Well, it turns out one of the problems is that our policymakers and our economists have been so obsessed with GDP growth that is part of the reason. It's certainly not the only reason that we're stuck in this crisis. Not just a climate crisis, but an inequality crisis, economic inequality crisis, a crisis of all sorts of social, environmental, and economic aspects of our economy that are just not being accounted for, that really do matter a great deal to us. So Maryland is the first state in the country to have put in place an alternative to gross state product, and it's called the Genuine Progress Indicator. And now Vermont has followed suit, and several West Coast states are now beginning to look at, in fact, California is we're hoping to be one of the states that begins to explore this new metric as a way of moving forward and really beginning to look at what do we measure when we want to enhance overall human and societal well-being. Is it just an increase in gross state product or is it something different? And we think this new indicator shows a lot of promise in helping us get there.
Well, just in closing, I was watching some stupid television show the other day. Not that I go out of my way to watch stupid television shows, but they're ubiquitous. And there was an interview with Prince Charles, and you know how obsessed Americans are, in spite of having had a revolution against the British, about royalty and how much coverage the royal family get. And now there's a possibility of a royal grandchild on the way. They're asking Prince Charles about his royal grandchild. And he said how much he's looking forward to being a grandfather. But then he said, but, you know, I'm very concerned about the world that my grandchild is coming into, and I'm extremely concerned about climate change and how it's going to affect his world. And I think we should all be very, very concerned about the kind of world our children and grandchildren are inheriting and take responsibility for it. And I thought, well, that's a great way to get a message across.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think all of the policy issues that we're obsessed about, whether it's the fiscal cliff or, you know, who knows what's going on in your state at the moment that's grabbing headlines, but they pale in comparison to what we really will be talking about 100 years from now, 50 years from now, what every person on the planet will be upset about, which is the potential for runaway climate change. And we really do need to make this a priority for ourselves and for our children and our grandchildren. And you know, I've sort of dedicated my life to working on this, but we need as many folks as possible really putting their shoulder to the wheel and thinking up new ways of getting other people involved. And one way is to join in some of the protests that are going on over the Keystone XL pipeline that hopefully Obama will reject. But another is to stop these coal exports that are moving their way from the coal mines of Wyoming and Montana to the West Coast, and then, you know, working for clean energy solutions to these problems, because we have the technology, we just need the political will.
Well, Daphne Weisham, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Daphne Weisham, who's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies and the founder and co-director of the Sustainable Energy and Economy Network. Since 1996, she has worked on research and advocacy at the intersection of climate change, human rights, fossil fuels, international finance, carbon markets, and sustainable economies. She's also played a leadership role on Capitol Hill, advising the Congressional Progressive Caucus on a progressive agenda for climate change, and is currently conducting research around ways in which alternative metrics to the GDP, such as the genuine progress indicators, can be used to build a more sustainable society. And this has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and the conversation continues at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Bye.